Hi gang, thanks for downloading this classic episode of News Fighters. Just a reminder, if you're looking for new original episodes of News Fighters, they're now over on the Irrational Fear podcast feed. So search for Irrational Fear on your podcasting app or go to irrationalfear.com for all new episodes of News Fighters. In the meantime, enjoy this classic News Fighters episode.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Zanspans Radio, Australia's dumbest podcast network.
This is News Fighters, where we fight the news so you don't have to.
With Dylan Behan.
G'day everyone, welcome to News Fighters. It's Wednesday, June the 2nd, 2021. News Fighters, if you haven't listened to it before, is a hilarious news comedy podcast where I rip apart the big stories in Australian news, media and politics. And it's presented by me, former and current and legend eternal comedy video editor guy, Dylan Bain. Now stick around, later on my interview guest is the China correspondent for the Australian Financial Review, Michael Smith, who I've mentioned previously on this show. He was, ushered out of China unceremoniously in September last year.
Shortly after midnight, there's a huge knock at my front door. So staggered downstairs in my boxer shorts and opened the door, and there's seven uniformed police at my door. So when something like this happens in China, it's pretty daunting stuff.
Okay, but first of all, I think it's been a while since we've talked about China on the show, so I thought let's do a little recap of what's been making headlines lately. Last week, there was this.
US President Joe Biden is ordering American intelligence agencies to ramp up their probe into whether COVID-19 leaked from a laboratory in Wuhan, giving them 90 days to come up with more evidence.
Yeah, look out, Joe Biden, or China might put tariffs on your barley and lobsters like they did to us when we called for an inquiry into COVID-19. Or worse, you might hurt their feelings.
A senior Chinese diplomat has accused Australia of hurting his country's feelings by demanding an investigation into the origins of the coronavirus.
Also, in terms of China-Australia relations, this high-profile court case has been in the news.
The trial of Australian writer Yang Hengjun has begun in Beijing. Dr. Yang was arrested by Chinese authorities in January 2019 and was charged with espionage last October.
Australia's ambassador to China was today turned away from a heavily guarded Beijing court where the espionage trial of an Australian Chinese blogger was set to get underway.
Yes, China has arrested an Australian blogger, despite the fact nobody has even claimed to be a blogger since about 2008. It's a bit like arresting somebody for having a really bad MySpace profile. Why is Tom in your top eight? And do you really need that Bright Eyes song to prove you're an emo? Well, surely Yang Hengjun, being a foreign citizen, meant he at least got a fair and open trial, right?
Australia's repeatedly requested evidence of the charges levelled against him to no avail.
The foreign minister has accused the Chinese government of shutting Australia out, calling for officials to be let into the courtroom. Chinese authorities have not provided any explanation or evidence for the charges facing Dr. Yang.
The courts in China are subordinate to the Communist Party. That means the Communist Party in China controls the judiciary. And the conviction rate in Chinese courts is at 99%.
Yes, a 99% conviction rate. I mean, Peter Dutton heard that and he's like, how can I do this? I've got Twitter users who are mean to me. Can I put them on trial in Beijing? I'm Peter Dutton. China-Australia tensions have also been on the rise thanks to a lot of talk about war lately.
One of Australia's top security bosses has warned our country should brace for the curse of war. In his ANZAC message to staff, Home Affairs Secretary Michael Pezzullo declared the drums of war are beating louder.
Home Affairs Secretary Mike Pezzullo's gone global for his comments in his ANZAC Day address. In a world of perpetual tension and dread, the drums of war beat. Free nations again hear the beating drums.
Yes, the drums of war are beating. And Australia is starting to look like the drunk guy at a house party who just found a set of bongos and won't shut the hell up.
The Morrison government is escalating projects to boost our defence force amid growing concerns of a regional conflict.
The United States is planning to base more of its weapons in the Northern Territory as tensions rise with China. The government says the US alliance is vital to Australia's defence.
The Morrison government is pouring $270 billion into defence over the next decade.
To make sure that the Australian Defence Force is in the strongest possible position in a very uncertain time.
It comes days after Defence Minister Peter Dutton said a war involving China over Taiwan should not be discounted.
And it's not just a potential war over Taiwan that Peter Dutton's preparing for. He's also decided to wage a massive culture war against LGBTQI-inclusive morning teas in his department.
Defence Minister Peter Dutton has banned all dress-up events at Defence to stop his department from pursuing a woke agenda. Military personnel had been advised to wear rainbow clothing at a morning tea to mark the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, Interphobia and Transphobia.
Yes, Peter Dutton has vowed to boost morale in the Defence Forces, and nothing boosts morale like banning pro-inclusivity events. China's hit back at Australia's loud and annoying drum solo.
We urge certain individuals in Australia to shake off the Cold War mentality, stop making irresponsible remarks.
Abiding by the One China principle is an important feature of China-Australia relations.
But not to worry, our Prime Minister Scott Morrison has his head around the issues, especially Australia's support for the One China policy in regards to Taiwan. I repeat, the One China policy.
Do we stand with Taiwan?
We have always understood the one system, two countries arrangement, and we will continue to follow our policies there.
So does that mean we stand with Taiwan?
One country, two systems, I should say.
We stand with Taiwan?
We always have stood for freedom in our part of the world.
Look, to be fair, Scott Morrison had a little memory blank or a little slip of the tongue there. Appeared to mix up Taiwan and Hong Kong. Hong Kong, of course, being subject to the one country, two systems arrangement. So I'm sure Scott Morrison will just admit he's made a mistake and won't double down on it.
You made a recent comment about Taiwan. You referred to it as one country, two systems. Why did you say that?
Well, what we know is that we have a situation with China where we've recognised how they see these relationships within the region, and particularly in relation to Taiwan and formerly Hong Kong and things of that nature. And so Australia understands that. That's always been the basis of our policies.
But did you make a mistake in that comment?
No.
All right, Prime Minister, look, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Oh, geez, with that kind of never-admit-you-wrong attitude, I'm surprised Scott Morrison didn't, like, admit he was in Hawaii to fight the New South Wales bushfires. The best place to fight the New South Wales bushfires is from Honolulu. I repeat, Honolulu. It's my Scott Morrison impression. Anyways, when we come back, we interview an Australian citizen who was almost arbitrarily detained in China last year.
ABC journalist Bill Birtles and Australian Financial Review correspondent Mike Smith fleeing China after coordinated midnight police raids on their homes.
Michael Smith from the Australian Financial Review and the ABC's Bill Birtles were the last two Australian correspondents working for Australian media outlets in China.
The China correspondent for the Australian Financial Review, Michael Smith, is here to talk Taiwan, Xinjiang, Hong Kong, and the midnight knock on his door that led him to flee China. Stick around.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
All right, joining me now is Michael Smith, the China correspondent for the Australian Financial Review and author of the great new book, The Last Correspondent, Dispatches from the Frontline of Xi's New China. Now, Michael Smith, listeners of the show might remember we talked about last year, him and the ABC's Bill Birtles were unceremoniously ushered out of China kind of last minute. Michael, what was the story there? It was you had a midnight knock at your door. Is that what happened?
Yeah, it was all very dramatic in early September last year. Bill and I had been warned by the Australian government that we needed to get out of China. We weren't safe. We didn't really know why. So I'd packed my bags, bought a ticket out the next day, and went off to bed. And then shortly after midnight, there's a huge knock at my front door. So staggered downstairs in my boxer shorts and opened the door, and there's seven uniformed police at my door. So when something like this happens in China, it's pretty daunting stuff, and it turns out that some of them were from the Ministry of State Security, which is, it's like having the FBI turn up at your house, but much, much worse. So, yeah, look, they came into the house, sat me down, they filmed me. It was extremely intimidating, and they sort of read out this three-page statement, which basically said I was a person of interest in a national security investigation and I wasn't allowed to leave China.
And so it was almost like you weren't kicked out. It was kind of like if you're at a nightclub and they're like, all right, time to go, mate. It was a bit like that, wasn't it? Like there was just rumblings that you weren't safe. Why do you think this was? Were you pawns in this kind of game? Is it this kind of hostage diplomacy thing going on you talk a bit about in the book?
Yeah, we did. We just got totally sucked into, this diplomatic spat between Australia and China. And it turns out we didn't know this at the time, but ASIO had raided the homes of four Chinese journalists back in Sydney in June. Right. And it was put to me later that, if you rough up our journalists, we're going to rough up your journalists. And I think that's what happened. They really wanted to intimidate us. I mean, it was a bit weird because, they left my house after that. And I still don't know to this day whether I would have been locked up or not if I'd stayed in China. But the thing is, we just didn't really know what was going on. And China's become so unpredictable these days. There was still this risk we could sort of be disappeared into some black prison and never be seen again. So, I think the Australian government was extremely nervous and decided they just had to put us under protection and get us out of there.
And that was a risk because Chung Lee, the Australian newsreader, is still imprisoned in China. And then the Canada, there's a couple of the two Michaels are still imprisoned over there. What do you think China's aim was here? Was it just to make a name of you, or was it to actually get rid of Australian journalists? Because there's no Australian journalists on the ground in China anymore, is there?
Yeah, there's a couple of different theories because, I don't think it was anything to do with a particular story I was working on or anything like that. And the fact they targeted Bill and I, and we were the only two journalists left in the country at the time working for Aussie media outlets. And so it was all very political. I think it was designed to send a message to Australia, another sort of tit for tat episode in this sort of diplomatic, warfare that's been going on for sort of 9 months now. And then, I don't actually think they wanted us out of there because I think it's actually now backfired on them. I mean, when you don't have any journalists on the ground in China, we're all outside of China, and you tend to write more negative stories about China when you're not there because, you know, you're talking to all your sources are people in Australia. There's a very negative view about China and Australia at the moment. So when you're on the ground in China, you actually sort of go and get to talk to ordinary people and you get to do the fun and quirky stories as well. So, you know, by having no journalists in the country, I think it's doing China a bit of a disservice.
In my mind, this ties in a bit to the escalating trade war with China. It feels like there's tariffs on everything every week. What's the long-term aim here? Are they just trying to make an example of Australia, do you think, with the trade war and all this kind of stuff?
Yeah, a year ago, we never thought it would come to anything like this. So I think China's really trying to make an example of Australia to the rest of the world. They're sort of trying to tell everyone else, you know, we're quite powerful now, please, you know, don't mess with us. And we're obviously a really soft target because we rely so heavily on China economically. And I think China feels like we've just got too big for our boots when you've got sort of the Morrison government sort of sticking its neck out and saying, hey, you know, we should have an inquiry into the origins of coronavirus. And there's been tensions for years over the fact that Australia was sort of one of the first countries to ban Huawei. So, I think they sort of want to teach us a bit of a lesson here.
But we must be incredibly small fry for China, really. We're like, they have many cities with a bigger population than Australia. So I guess they don't mind flinging us around a little bit.
No, that's right. There's the editor of this newspaper, this tabloid newspaper in China called the Global Times, which is very hawkish. I mean, he famously said last year, Australia's like that piece of gum you get on your shoe. It sort of just sticks there and it keeps being a little bit annoying, but eventually you just sort of scrape it off. So I think, you know, I think Australia's important to China. You know, they do need our iron ore and a few other things, but I think they find us sort of quite annoying at the moment.
Now, to your book, like I was just saying, if I'm a bit tired, it's because I was up late powering through it. I'm about 2/3 of the way through. It's a great read. In my mind, it's kind of blending your stories on the ground of meeting everyone from billionaires to migrant workers, and it's all tied up in the way their lives have changed with the massive political and economic changes that have happened there. What was your aim with the book? Is that a kind of fair summary? Or
yeah, no, I'm really glad you put it that way because I think that's what I was sort of setting out to achieve, like sort of telling the story of China, but not just, you know, the politics and the economics of it all. And there's sort of a lot of dry books on this subject out there, but sort of to give people a bit of a picture of what it was like living in China, what life was like on the ground there, but also, you know, a bit of an idea of what the people are like, because we sort of, you know, we tend to demonize the Chinese people a lot. We're always sort of, you know, writing negative things about the Chinese government, but the Chinese people are just fascinating. They've all gone through these enormous social and economic upheavals because the country's just changed so quickly. So, you know, I had friends and their mum and dad were starving in the Cultural Revolution, and then they're sort of running around Shanghai living in multi-million dollar high-rise apartments. And so their lives have sort of changed really dramatically, and they've all got great stories to tell. So I've sort of tried to add a bit of colour. You know, I've told some, you know, a lot of my own personal stories and anecdotes and involving friends, and sort of tried to bring the country to life a bit, I suppose.
And one of my favourite sections in the book is you went on a state-organised visit to Xinjiang, which is where the oppressed Uyghur people are, and you said it resembled something a bit like The Truman Show. Am I right?
That's right. You've really done your homework. But and in 2019, we were invited to Xinjiang by the Chinese government. And look, it was just this massive propaganda tour. But the scale of the whole exercise was just absolutely fascinating. I mean, it really highlighted the resources they've got at their disposal. And I went up there with sort of 30 journalists from different countries all around the world. And I mean, it was sort of 10 days of singing and dancing Uyghurs. We went to three different cities, went to all these elaborate stage shows. And then we were taken out into the desert to what they told us were sort of vocational training centers. So they were sort of pretending, hey, these are the re-education camps that you guys write about. And they're all fake. I mean, they were just sort of, you know, there were daffodils growing in the garden and people baking cookies. And we're allowed to interview all the, you know, Uyghur kids at these schools, but they all had really scripted answers. They're all just telling us how happy they were, and they were there voluntarily. And it was just, yeah, it was like The Truman Show. I mean, nothing seemed real. And then at nighttime, you know, like any good journalist, me and a couple of others, we'd sneak out of our hotel and try and have a good look around. But you were tailed by sort of undercover security guys, so they'd follow you everywhere. So you couldn't actually talk to anyone because you'd endanger those people.
Was it? Were you a bit worried if you looked around a corner, there'd be like a stage manager with a headset on, smoking a cigarette, going, "Oh, not allowed here." Like, was it?
Yeah,
almost. Yeah, feel like a movie set almost.
It did. I mean, we went to a lot of factories, and we went to a couple of sort of textile factories, but they were so. I mean, I've been to a lot of factories in China, and so you know what a real factory is and what isn't, and they were just sort of so pristine, and it just felt like everything was a bit staged, and everything was gleaming new, and. It just didn't feel real. You've sort of got to go with your gut instinct sometimes.
There was also, you gave a lot of fascinating insight into what it was like being a foreign correspondent in China. One of the bits I found interesting was you wrote a report on the National People's Congress, which you described, I think, fairly as a rubber stamp body. And you said Xi, President Xi, was very kind of expressionless. And you got kind of rounded up for that by a diplomat or someone, didn't you? Did you have to explain to them kind of how this free press thing works?
Well, yeah, that happens quite a lot when you're a foreign journalist in China. You get called in for sort of, they call it cups of tea, like a cup of yep. tea chat. And then it's always very polite and friendly. And then, you know, after the first hour, then you get a bit of a lecture about something you've written and you sort of get scolded. I mean, they don't sort of lock you up or anything. But, and in this case, I was actually back in Sydney in this case on a sort of work trip, and you know they called me in here at the consulate in Sydney and lectured me about, you know, the way I described Xi Jinping as being expressionless, and it was almost a compliment because I was comparing him to Donald Trump, who's yep, a bit yep. sort of mad, obviously, and that they took offence to that. So you sort of can't really sort of write anything that keeps them happy, and I think they struggle to understand the idea of this free press. I mean, in China, the press is controlled by the government, and I think it's difficult for China to accept that sometimes.
Now, just on Xi. Do you view him as an expansionist? The view I'm getting from your book so far, two-thirds of the way through, is it feels like he's painted himself into a corner a little bit in terms of, you're saying, his anti-corruption pushes has made a lot of enemies, so he can't really step down without making a lot of enemies. With Taiwan, do you think he now has painted himself into a corner where he sees this as the end game, that it has to be brought back into China?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an argument that Xi's changed the constitution, so he can be president for life now, effectively. Mm. And there is a risk for him that if one day when he eventually steps down, he made a lot of enemies and people could come after him. But for the time being, he's got a really firm grip on power, and he's not going anywhere. And the Taiwan issue is really interesting because, you know, China has long considered, you know, Taiwan part of its territory, and there is this sort of long-term unification ambition for Taiwan, and it does want to bring Taiwan back into the fold eventually, but it's still a bit different than, say, Hong Kong, which was part of Chinese territory. Mm. And the problem for China now is, you know, it does want to take Taiwan back, but whether it tries to do it immediately or bides its time and does it in a more peaceful manner in the next 10 years or so is another question. I mean, I think we're getting a bit worked up at the moment. There's a lot of sort of war talk around Taiwan, but there's actually no sign of an imminent invasion. I mean, there's sort of no sign they're getting the troops ready to go in. So I think we need to calm down a little bit. But, I mean, I think Xi's very clever. I think he'll try and find a way to take control of the place without sort of going into a conflict one day. And, you know, let's just hope that doesn't happen.
Based on your coverage of the Taiwan election, though, I don't think the people of Taiwan are interested in this at all. Has Xi misread the room here? He doesn't just expect them to come home like despondent teens coming home when they've run out of money or something, does he?
Yeah. No, everything changed because I think in around, you know, 2018, you know, the opposition political party in Taiwan, the nationalists, they're a bit more pro-China. So they were actually gaining a lot of popularity and they look likely to win the next election. And then Hong Kong changed everything because China freaked everyone out in Taiwan by going in hard on Hong Kong and sort of not respecting the one country, two system sort of model it held up as an example for Hong Kong. So that freaked out the Taiwanese population. And then when, you know, they had the presidential elections at the start of last year and the Democratic Party won by a landslide, and that really highlighted how Taiwanese people feel, particularly younger Taiwanese people feel. They don't want to be part of mainland communist China. I mean, they're very different, you know, they're completely sort of different people culturally. They've been brought up under sort of a very democratic Western style system, so they do have a different view on life. And I really don't think they want to be part of Xi Jinping's China at the moment.
And you mentioned Hong Kong there, having lived in Hong Kong for quite a while. What's the mood on the ground? I assume you've still got friends there. What's the mood on the ground in Hong Kong, and what's the vibe going forward? Is everyone just kind of given up a little bit, or they're just like, this is how it is now, or is everyone just looking to flee to other countries?
Yeah, it's pretty depressing, actually. Dylan, I think everyone's really given up. I mean, we had all those huge protests in 2019, and they've effectively been stamped out now. And China introduced these, you know, very draconian national security laws. So anyone who tries to voice their protest is locked up. And I think the Hong Kong people, they either have to accept the situation. A lot of them are leaving. A lot of them who have passports are getting out of there. And every day you see China chipping away at currently its press freedom and the legal system. So it's sort of things have changed there really dramatically.
And they're just accepting this is how it's going to be going forward. I guess there's no way they can get these laws repealed now, is there?
Yeah, no, I think it's very difficult. And I think, you know, I mean, the US and Australia and other countries objected to what was going on and sort of imposed these, you know, very superficial sanctions on China. But really, it was pretty ineffective. And you know, there doesn't seem to be any solution for Hong Kong unless things, you know, dramatically changed in China. But I think, you know, there's a lot of underlying dissatisfaction in Hong Kong, but I just can't see that sort of emerging into a big protest movement again. It's just too dangerous for everyone.
Wow. Okay, so what's next for you? You're still the China correspondent for the Financial Review, but you're not in China, is that correct? You're still on the
China
beat.
I'm part of, there's quite a large group of us now in Australia from Australian outlets, but also international outlets like the New York Times. And we're all trying to cover China from Sydney. So it's all a bit ridiculous, really. It's sort of not the ideal situation, but it's just not safe to go back in there at the moment. But I'm heading to Japan in July. The Australian Financial Review is going to open a bureau in Tokyo and sort of cover North Asia from there. And, you know, when the borders open, we can get back into Taiwan, but it's just going to be tricky getting back into China for the time being.
Well, I hope we get some Australian journalists back there soon, and I hope you're among them. Thanks for chatting to us. The book is The Last Correspondent, Dispatches from the Frontline of Xi's New China. Michael Smith, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on, Dylan.
Cheers. Thank you. All right, that's News Fighters for today, June the 2nd, 2021. News Fighters is written, presented, and produced by me, Dylan Bain, for Sans Pants Radio. A big thank you to our interview guest, Michael Smith, for stopping by. Don't forget to check out his book, The Last Correspondent, wherever books are sold. That's it. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at newsfighters.com and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and hit subscribe on YouTube. That's it. Keep fighting, and bye for now.
This is News Fighters, where we fight the news so you don't have to.
Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.